In America, we've become remarkably skilled at celebrating our differences while ignoring our deepening economic divide. As the wealth gap reaches historic proportions, our national conversation remains fixated on cultural identity rather than financial inequality. Why do we enthusiastically embrace diversity initiatives while economic disparities grow unchecked? This paradox sits at the heart of The Trouble with Diversity, a provocative examination of how our focus on cultural differences serves as a convenient distraction from addressing the widening gulf between rich and poor. When F. Scott Fitzgerald remarked that the rich are different, Hemingway famously replied, "Yes, they have more money." This exchange perfectly captures our society's fundamental tension. Are social differences about what people have, wealth, or what they are? Our persistent choice to focus on the latter while ignoring the former reveals something profound about American values. We'd rather celebrate cultural diversity than confront economic disparity. Race persists as a powerful social construct despite lacking scientific validity. Cases like Homer Plessy, 1892, and Susie Guillory Phipps, 1977, light-skinned individuals legally classified as black, reveal how racial classification operates beyond physical appearance, functioning as an assumed internal quality. Modern genetics has debunked biological notions of race. Genetic variation within supposed racial groups often exceeds variation between them. Sickle cell anemia, considered a black disease in America, actually correlates with ancestry from malaria-prone regions regardless of race. Despite this evidence, the concept persists socially. W.E.B. Du Bois defined blackness through shared experience rather than physical traits. What connects black people is being identified as black, not genetic commonality. This creates a paradox. We acknowledge race has no biological reality while continuing to categorize people as if it did. Culture has become both a synonym for and replacement of racial identity. This anthropological concept emerged as an alternative to race, suggesting group differences are learned rather than biological. Yet this shift merely transforms racial stereotyping into cultural stereotyping. As Richard Ford notes, supposedly black cultural traits are neither practiced by most black people nor exclusive to them. Culture's problem lies in its circular dependency on race. We can only identify practices as belonging to a racial group if we already know who belongs to that group. Heritage supporting cultural identity is equally problematic, as cultural heritage isn't biologically inherited. We don't inherit languages, books, or art through genes. Cultural diversity presents difference without inequality. By imagining different but equal cultures, we avoid addressing wealth redistribution needs. Culture offers comfortable ethnic differences rather than uncomfortable economic class differences. At elite universities, students identify proudly by ethnicity but rarely by class, allowing institutions to maintain meritocratic fantasies while masking the economic disparities that truly determine educational outcomes. Universities function as our primary justification for economic inequality. The reassuring notion that elite schools include students from all backgrounds masks reality. Only 3% of students at selective colleges come from the lowest socioeconomic quarter, while 74% come from the highest. At elite campuses, students are 25 times more likely to encounter rich peers than poor ones. SAT scores correlate strongly with family income, rising about 12 points for every $20,000 in family income. If Harvard's income distribution matched America's, over half its students would vanish, mostly wealthy white students who benefited from private schools, test prep, and enrichment activities. Race-based affirmative action essentially works as a collective bribe rich people pay themselves for ignoring economic inequality. Harvard's policy of waiving tuition for families earning under $60,000 barely helps the poor, who rarely qualify for admission due to systemic educational disadvantages beginning in childhood. In novels like I Am Charlotte Simmons and Prep, scholarship students face embarrassment over class markers. Charlotte's unemployed father with his rusted pickup, Lee's father in the mattress business with their old Datsun. These details reveal class differences where wealth hides behind casual privilege. Despite diversity commitments, America's top universities remain bastions of privilege where wealth perpetuates itself under the guise of merit. Americans claim to believe in equal opportunity while supporting policies that make opportunities fundamentally unequal. We champion meritocracy, yet when wealth determines educational access, merit becomes secondary. A society truly committed to equal opportunity would fund schools equally and eliminate private education. Instead, wealthy parents naturally secure better schools for their children. Contradicting meritocratic values further, 50% of Americans oppose any estate tax, with even those who will never inherit significant wealth defending untaxed inheritance. This creates a fundamental contradiction. We claim to value hard work and ability while supporting policies ensuring inheritance matters more. As the American Enterprise Institute warns, if citizens perceive the rules as unfair, the political repercussions could be significant. Questioning why people shouldn't challenge a system rigged to benefit certain groups regardless of merit. The shift from ideological to identity-based thinking transforms how we view differences. When convinced by an argument, we adopt new beliefs as improvements without mourning incorrect ideas. No one laments abandoning human sacrifice. Cultural identity operates differently. Moving between cultures isn't experienced as progress because cultures aren't right or wrong, just different. Beliefs divide into right or wrong, while cultures divide into same or different. We celebrate cultural diversity, but not mistakenness. When Evo Morales advocates nationalizing Bolivia's water system, he speaks as a socialist. When referencing the dreams of our ancestors, he speaks as an indigenous person. Socialism represents ideology, while being Aymara Indian represents identity. This distinction obscures economic inequality, similar to how ancestry versus wealth does. Our commitment to diversity rests on respecting cultural identity. Yet paradoxically, what's truly worth preserving transcends identity. We preserve Shakespeare not because he's part of our culture, but because his works are universally great. We value liberal democratic institutions because we believe they're superior to alternatives, not because they're ours. As America has grown more diverse, economic inequality has worsened. Since 2005, the top 1% have seen their income rise by 36.8% to $1,303,198, while the bottom 99% experienced a 0.4% decline. Yet, as this disparity grows, our focus has shifted to non-economic inequalities. Wall Street firms win diversity awards while paying enormous bonuses, and both corporations and progressives celebrate cultural rights while ignoring income redistribution. Black Americans fare worse economically today, not from increased racism, but because economic downturns hit poor people hardest, and black people were already disproportionately poor. A race-blind wealth transfer to poor people, even just a $15 minimum wage, would benefit poor black communities more than any anti-discrimination law. In our celebration of cultural identity, we've lost sight of what truly divides us: money. While we've made progress celebrating differences, we've allowed economic inequality to reach staggering heights. The wealthy have convinced us that cultural identities matter more than economic interests. The problem isn't diversity itself, it's that our focus on cultural differences prevents us from confronting the economic system that keeps most Americans struggling while a tiny minority prospers.